So, may you live in interesting times. It's that time in the church's year when, if we follow the lectionary as these readings do, we hear dramatic readings about interesting times. In Luke, we heard a vivid account of what are called the last days. And actually, doesn't it sound scarily familiar? The strange thing is that it's felt like that actually for many centuries. Few are the times when nations are not at war with one another, or kingdoms rising up against kingdoms. There are always earthquakes somewhere. Having started out as an earth scientist, I've discovered a wonderful app on the computer and I can see where all the earthquakes are. There was actually one in France this last week, which is very unusual. And of course, not far away in Italy, there have been horrendous floods in Venice. That's the sea as much as anything. And in our own country, we're very clear that the heavens do open. But let's be honest, the weather patterns around the world are becoming more dramatic than they used to be. Maybe these are the dreadful portents and signs from heaven of which Jesus spoke. We don't know. But what we do know is that the UK is in the middle of one of the most acrimonious phases of public life many of us can remember. It is a complex place, and yes, one way to describe it certainly might be that we are living in interesting times. And what's the significance of this? Potentially, it is that the end of the world is nigh. Maybe humankind will cause extinction of its own species. Perhaps the Lord will return, however that may happen. We don't know. But our calling as Christians is surely to respond to the context in which we live according to the will of God. The Christian message is that Jesus came to earth, lived, died, and was raised to new life to save us, essentially from ourselves. Given the precarious state of our nation and of the world right now, that message could not be more relevant. In the epistle, we read St. Paul is writing to another church with problems. It's a community beset with opposition. Oh my goodness, doesn't that sound familiar too? We live in what is theoretically still a Christian country. And yet, even in our own nation, Christians are under attack for their beliefs. Some of it overt, much of the attack is covert. I was reading something the other day in preparation for Red Wednesday later this month, and the most persecuted religious group across the world today is those who follow the Christian faith. So perhaps it's more important than ever that we take on board the encouragement that Paul gave to small Christian communities like that in Thessalonica. Jump forward a couple of millennia, and they are us. So forget the easy life. Paul commands that the faithful keep away from bad influences, like people who live in idleness, who are busybodies, who refuse to do any work. But what then are we to do? How are we supposed to live the Christian life in these interesting times? I think a clue comes right at the end of the passage we heard from 2 Thessalonians. Brothers and sisters, do not be weary in doing what is right. And I'd like to suggest that we are actually living in the middle of collective weariness. In Winslow, where we live, the parish church, which is very much at the centre of the community, is hosting hustings for the election. And Frank, as many of you know, is a Catholic, went to Mass last night, and he said to one of the people there, who is herself a retired university lecturer, he said, "Oh, you're going to come to the hustings?" She said, "No, can't be bothered." Just one example of the weariness. There's a weariness in the church, across pretty much all the churches. We aren't growing. And what's more, it seems to be increasingly hard to describe or demonstrate the church's relevance. And then there's the nation in which we live. There's a huge level of collective weariness about the B word and about the election and politics in general, as I've just indicated. Actually, it's slightly less the case in my own constituency, apart from that one example maybe, because we've, for 10 years, our MP has been Mr. Speaker. So we're actually delighted that we've got a meaningful vote again. But in general, people are fed up. And fed upness tends to translate through weariness to apathy. And those traits of weariness and apathy are the enemy of all that is good. Britain has an increasing problem with homelessness, people living below the poverty line, those who are dependent on food banks, or the just about managings. And then if we think wider, globally, there are millions around the world who lack the basics of life which most of us are fortunate to take for granted. And there are still millions who live in a state of fear from war or persecution. There is perhaps a glimmer of hope environmentally. There's been a lot of publicity recently about both pollution and climate change. And maybe, just maybe, people are beginning to think about whether they can do anything about such things. But it still all feels like such a giant mess. It's so tempting to bury our heads in the sand, to go with the status quo, to take the easy way out. To many, it all feels so vast. Their little efforts just feel like a drop in the ocean. And it's just all too much effort. Hang on. That's weariness setting in. Brothers and sisters, do not be weary in doing what is right, St. Paul says. Or as another translation puts it, never tire of doing what is right. So we can sense the complexity. We can hear the challenge. We are called to stand up for what is right. But how do we know what is right? Well, of course, the simple answer is to follow the way Christ taught. To love God, to love our neighbour as ourselves. That's a great principle on which to base our lives. But it doesn't necessarily easily translate into day-to-day decisions. So how do we do what is right? For Christians, the way that is right is whatever follows God's will and fits into God's purpose. Sometimes that's clear and easy to see. So the broad brush decisions about care for our environment, for example, might be easy. Our world is God's world. We are stewards of that creation. So we need to do everything we can to protect its integrity. But when it comes to deciding actual actions or making decisions day to day, it isn't always that easy. Some are just plain complicated. Others have conflicting ethical arguments buried within them. Food miles versus providing an income for a developing world farmer is a classic example of what I mean. But I wonder if you've ever made a decision and then just not felt comfortable about it. Not being able to find peace. I guess most of us have done that at some point, if not many times. The Christian concept of confession certainly expects that we will be like this. When we know we've done wrong or we can't find peace, we offer it up to God and try to do our best to make amends or to find a way that does feel more comfortable. But the best way, of course, is not to react after we've done something and discover the need to unpick it as best we can. The best course of action is to be proactive, to think and seek God's will before we act. And that process of discovering God's will, the process of discernment, is not always easy. But it gets easier with practice. And the more we genuinely listen out for God's voice. Saint Ignatius of Loyola famously gave us guidelines for discernment. Test something out prayerfully in your mind. Does it feel as though it will bring you closer to God? Or might it take you further from God? The former, the positive, the drawing closer to God. He calls consolation, and the separation from God, desolation. The more time we spend with God, the more we develop the habit of testing every action in the light of God's will, the more alert we will become to whether something will bring desolation or consolation. The more we will learn to act according to the will of God, the more his kingdom will come on earth. And, fascinatingly, the more our weariness will lift and we find ourselves re-energized to do the Lord's will. And that's our calling, remember, to do God's will. Almost at the end of the recent film, The Aeronauts, there's a powerful comment. You don't change the world simply by looking at it. You change the world by the way you live in it. May our living not be weighed down with weariness, but guided and energized by the will of God. Then we will find for ourselves the truth from Isaiah that those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. And our world will be a better place.